And our prayers are with you tonight. So to sum up, not a recession, more of a hovering. Salad shooter there, beaded seat cushion, butts with the hostages, die hard battery. We are going to make it because it's live from New York. It's Saturday night!
You liking the juice?
You liking the juice? You know what? I'm going to say it. This might be one of the better episodes we watched.
I was very surprised, but this was a downright enjoyable episode. Hammer did not really detract from it either. Well, he was only in like four sketches, which was good. Like, leave
and
Hammer
barely
out.
In any of them as well.
Yeah, no. When you got Hammer as a host, just let Hammer. He does three musical guests. That's what you need Hammer to do. And then you can have him play fucking Santa Claus after update. And that's all Hammer needs to do.
Yeah, he wasn't good, but they utilized him well, which is to say they didn't really utilize him that often.
Yeah, that was the best way to have Hammer host SNL. Is like, okay, Hammer, you're here to host SNL? You're going to play Hammer in two sketches? And you'll play Santa Claus in one.
Well, and let's get all of the Hammer talk out of the way. We might as well. We should say, for the record, we skipped, for the most part, the musical guest segments. But I feel like there's no getting around the title of this episode is going to be Kick and They Slap a Friend, right?
That's what the Addams Family do. That's how they do. And they do what they want to do.
And I tried to Google it. I looked it up on that Genius site, you know, that analyzes lyrics. No analysis for that. The only thing I could find on it is somebody actually asked MC Hammer what the lyric was, and he confirmed on Twitter it was Kick and They Slap a Friend. But no explanation. And nobody followed up. Nobody was like, hey, what does that mean, Hammer? And like, he was never put on the spot to be like, oh, it means this. What the fuck does that mean?
Excuse me, Hammer. I have two questions. I have time for one. Okay, is the lyric Kick and They Slap a Friend? Yes. Okay, what's that mean? I'm out of here. Damn it! Should have asked the second one first.
Because, yeah, I think if you'd asked, what does Kick and They Slap a Friend mean, implicit in that would be that that was the correct lyric, or at least he would correct you.
Yeah, it's just a bad choice of wording on that reporter's part. If you don't know what we're talking about, Addams Groove, the theme song from the original Addams Family movie, includes the line, they kick and they slap a friend.
Well, in a series of descriptions of what the Addams Family do, which, I saw both of those movies, I don't remember them kicking and slapping friends.
Okay, here's the lyrics to Addams Groove by Hammer. They do what they want to do. Okay, I'm with you so far, Hammer. They say what they want to say. Ooh, them Addams, they got minds of their own.
I'm loving this so far.
Live how they want to live. Uh-huh, standard. Play how they want to play. Well, who doesn't want to play how they want to play?
I'm admiring this family, these Addamses.
They dance how they want to dance, you know?
Everybody, I wish I could dance how I wanted to dance.
If I had the freedom to just dance how I want to dance. Kick and they slap a friend. Okay, now you've lost me. I don't know what that means.
Well, to take it literally, they're kicking and slapping their friends. Which, okay, here's my best analysis of it. I don't know if you weren't really a big, like, comic book fan as a kid. Dad had, like, the old Silver Age Superman comics, and they had a comic that was all centered around... Oh, by the way, I apologize if you can hear the fucking chainsaw in the background that my neighbor has suddenly decided to fucking chainsaw while I'm recording a podcast, you fucking asshole! Anyway, there was an issue. I think he's hearing me calling him an asshole.
Perfectly timed. He's like, oh yeah? Here's one more chainsaw for you, motherfucker.
I'm sorry. Is he trying to talk about an old issue of DC Comics and relate it to an even more obscure lyric from an MC Hammer song? Well, fuck that. Oh my god. Seriously? Do we want to work through it? Do we want to take a break?
What are the levels look like on your side? Does it look like it's picking it up?
I think so. You're hearing it, so I would assume they're hearing it at home.
Yeah, I can hear it through that side.
Jesus fucking Christ. Chainsaw. It's not even like I'm doing yard work. I'm mowing my lawn. Fucking chainsaw. Anyway. There was a piece of shit. I'm just gonna let it go. No, come on, keep going. This is now the episode. I don't give a fuck about MC Hammer's SNL performance. Now this is the neighbor chainsaw episode.
SNL Season 17, episode 6, brought to you by Wilson Chainsaws.
Hosted by a chainsaw. Fuck you! Anyway, I think it's just in the background, so you'll just hear that.
But no, yeah, it'll be all right.
There was an issue of Superman, the Silver Age, all centered around the Bizarro Superman, and they did everything the opposite of Superman. And so one of them was like, people would submit their things of like, you know, what did Bizarro do differently or the opposite? And one of the kids wrote in, when they get married, they don't kiss, they bite. And I wonder if kick and they slap a friend is just like, the Addams Family are weird. They don't, you know, hug and welcome their friends into their home. They kick and slap them because they're the opposite of everything.
But they kick and they slap a friend doesn't even follow the same scheme as what he's doing.
No, because all the other stuff is just that they're independent and, you know, they're the kind of neighbors that chainsaw outside of their fucking house. Stop it, stop it!
They chainsaw how they want to chainsaw. That makes more sense than kick and slap a friend.
I mean, yeah, no, I would totally get that. I have personal experience with shitty neighbors and chainsaw. But that's the only explanation I have is that it's just like, they're opposite and weird. They kick and slap friends.
Well, anyway, MC Hammer hosted Saturday Night Live.
How much do you have to chainsaw?
What's he chainsawing?
I don't even fucking know.
Now I'm more curious about this than MC Hammer hosting Saturday Night Live from 1991, the anniversary of Pearl Harbor, by the way.
Yes, we should talk about that, because there was a whole Pearl Harbor sketch that seemed incredibly arbitrary until we Googled that.
There was 8 weeks. I kind of figured it out when there was, like, 8 Weekend Update jokes from Kevin Nealon about Pearl Harbor, and I was like, who the fuck's in the writer's room going, hey, guys, I got another one about Pearl Harbor. All right, Jimmy.
And I will say that sketch, we're jumping ahead a little bit, but the Pearl Harbor sketch is Phil Hartman is the only one in the newsroom who wants to report on it. Everyone else wants to report on, like, the weather and Picayune News. And it wasn't a funny sketch until the very end when they're doing the various headlines. And one of them is, journalist commits suicide. And it's just his face going, why won't they listen to me?
That made me howl when I saw that. All right, but first we got to talk about
the Iranian hostages. It was the Lebanese hostages.
12 minutes of George Bush cold open.
You had 12 minutes. In my notes, I put George Bush sells me shit for 10 minutes.
Oh my God. I was starting off liking it because this is like, what was this, 91? Okay, so we're getting towards the end of George Bush's, what do you call, power.
His term in office?
Term.
Well, terms I couldn't think office. Of... No, he had one.
Yeah. Just one. I think this is when Dana Carvey was like, fuck it, I'm just, like, going to go, like, full tilt boogie on my bizarre Bush impression.
Yeah,
so I was enjoying...
It seems like the flourishes were very, much more exaggerated than I associate with that impression.
Yeah, he's like a fucking, like, mime. There's George Bush just like,
especially when he would laugh at himself, do that weird, like, evil laugh. It was much more, I don't know, maybe he was sick of Bush at that point, like, fuck this evil bastard, I'm gonna make him into Mr. Burns.
It's a lot of that. I was enjoying it, but then he talks about the recession, and then he's like, all right, so to get out of the recession, we as Americans have to spend. And then he starts hawking products, which is an interesting idea. He's like, okay, and if you want to spend money and boost the economy, you can buy this salad shooter for $38.98. So I was like, okay, I get it. But did we need 8 examples of that? Because then he sells socks, a Hickory Farms party in a box,
it just keeps
beer,
going and going.
A beaded seat cover, and a car battery. And I was like, Jesus Christ, why do we need 8 examples of fucking products?
Well, I mean, and I think it worked at the end when he had the dancing frogs and he's got to give the serious thing and it's a voice-activated thing that's dancing. Like, there were stuff that worked within it. It was just too many iterations of it.
Yeah, I was, like, starting to fall asleep and I'm like, how long is this thing? And then I looked at the time and I was like, oh, it's only been 4 minutes, but man, this felt like an eternity. But yeah, when he pulled out, I guess it was, like, the 1991 version of the Big Mouth Billy Bass. Because it's a voice-activated little fucking frog dancing thing. And he shows that, puts it on the desk, and he's like, and now I have to seriously talk about the American hostages that were just released. And then the frogs start doing a stupid dance while he's saying it. That was good.
Which brings us to this tasty item, the green machine. Damn this little thing. Little frog band there, isn't that cute? saw it in the checkout line, point of purchase, they call it, sort of an impulse buy. A boy said to me, don't pass this up. I said, not gonna buy it. Not gonna buy it. Bought it. You see, it's a whole combo here, voice activated, very clever. Jangle bell, jangle bell, jangle bell rock. Jangle around the clock. Isn't that a pistol? Sheer joy. And now on a more serious note, I just want to say a word to the families of our recently released hostages. I know that nothing can make up for the pain you've suffered. And sorry about that.
Yeah, and this is where we learned that there was a Lebanese hostage crisis in 1991.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Well, the one thing about this sketch too, I was thinking like how times have not changed, because like this would have been a perfect sketch to do during the Trump years. You know, just because of what a fucking shameless salesman he was. But you just make all the things Trump brand, whatever, you know?
Right. Yeah, it would have to be the Trump battery and the Trump Hickory Farms party in a box.
Yeah.
But speaking of the Lebanese hostages, MC Hammer's monologue. First
Holy
he comes out.
Holy shit.
And he's just like, hey, I'm Hammer. Hammer does, or doesn't even say, the joke is, I think it's a joke that he's speaking in the third person because he's like,
well, yeah,
because
he makes it a joke. He says, and I talked to Hammer and he said, you know.
Yeah. So he's like, Hammer is excited to be here. Hammer's never done live TV. And I was talking to Hammer yesterday and Hammer told Hammer or something like that.
See, and I think that's that and the haircut sketch. I was kind of impressed. Like, oh, he has kind of a sense of humor about himself.
Yeah. A little bit of humility from Hammer. But then Chris Rock shows up as Michael Jackson, and I don't know what this is about. He's challenging him to a duel or something?
I wondered if this was a thing, if people were saying, like, who was the best dancer or something.
Oh.
And, like, maybe there was, a public thing, like, they should have a dance-off. I can see that happening at that point.
Maybe, yeah, because Chris Rock comes out as Michael Jackson, and he's like, come on, Hammer, let's do it, let's do it. And then Hammer's like, all right, I'm going to do it, but I'm doing it my way, and I'm going to sing a song. So he moves over to the musical set and starts performing Too Legit to Quit. And of course, we don't give a shit about musical performances on SNL, so we're like, hey, let's skim through this bad boy. But my God, I'm glad we didn't skip the whole thing, because he stops Too Legit to Quit, which is a stupid fucking song, by the way.
Well, okay, we'll get to... Yes, all of MC Hammer's songs were stupid in the way that basically all music in the 90s was stupid. But I think it's pretty catchy. I'm actually not going to say that it's bad. I understand the Hammer phenomenon, even if it's not my kind of music. It's the performances were lively. I'm not going to shit on MC Hammer in the way that I think a lot of people do.
Oh, no, he's definitely a showman. I didn't get bored watching it. I just skipped through it because I'm like, well, what am I going to say? Like, we're watching this for a podcast. It's not like I'm going to get too deep into fucking Hammer's musical biography.
Well, I just think the lameness of it is just everything. When you look back on stuff nostalgically, everything is lame from the 90s. It was just a lame decade. But I don't think he was lamer than Rico Suave or the New Kids on the Block or anything else, you know.
No, he was hip in 1991, but it's just a stupid song. But it's Too Legit to Quit. And it's so repetitive, too. It's like, Too Legit to Quit. And then he stops and he's like, and now it's time for me to talk about how glad I am that the Lebanese hostages are back in America. And you're like, wait, whoa, whoa.
Well, he doesn't just say
wrong
that.
Wrong moment
he
for
says,
that, Hammer.
Those hostages, they're the ones that are truly too legit to quit. Which sounds like a joke I would make about this as I was talking about it, but they fucking did it.
Wayne and insane, it's a shame I gotta do this, but I remain the same. My game's getting better, never known as a sweater. Kicking at the top because I got myself together. So roll with a guy who's physical and fit. Know the time and too legit to quit on Saturday Night Live. We'd like to welcome home the American hostages. For they truly exemplify what it is to be too legit to quit. And when you think about them, you know what it feels like to sing.
Those fucking Lebanese hostages are too legit to quit. It would have been better if he did that during Adam's groove and he's like, you know who really kicks and slaps a friend? Lebanese hostages,
He keeps doing it in every fucking musical guest.
This is the way we roll, we roll. No one rolls like the Lebanese hostages!
You can't touch these Lebanese hostages. You know who's bizarre. Got the real pumps in a bump? The Lebanese hostages.
fucking Hammer. Give it a shout out to recently freed hostages.
Do you remember, like, it was like probably 5-6 years ago, maybe at this point, when Justin Bieber went to the Anne Frank Museum?
Oh, yeah.
And there was controversy. This reminded me of that, where there was controversy because he signed the guest book, and he signed it. You know, I really think if I was around during World War II, Anne Frank would have been a Belieber.
Right.
Which everybody hated. They hated him about as much as I hate this fucking chainsaw outside my fucking window. But no, they hated him for it. I was kind of sympathetic, because, like, he was trying to be understanding in the only stupid way he could. Like, he was trying to, like, engage with it. But everybody said he was an asshole. But this reminded me of that. Like, yeah. The hostages are too legit to quit.
It's very, very tone-deaf, Hammer. But it was very, very funny because of how fucking tone-deaf
it was. It's the funniest thing Hammer said in the entire episode.
Yeah. and then the first sketch, yeah, I like this one. Bad haircut support group.
I liked it, though I don't like that my only note is Rob Schneider shines, because that shouldn't be the highlight of a sketch.
He was very funny. I like this because you got to see a lot of the cast. I think the whole cast was in this sketch.
Yeah.
And they all have, like, you know, some of them have more to do than others, but everybody has, like, one little line that they're like, hey, I have a bad haircut, too.
And
we're basically in an Alcoholics Anonymous type meeting, but instead of drunks, everybody has bad haircuts.
Hello, my name is Bob.
Hello, Bob.
And I have a bad haircut. It's been 2 weeks since my last haircut, and it's still bad. But it doesn't mean that I'm not an attractive person.
That was good. That was very good. Now, what has Bob told himself? And it's very important. He's saying to himself, I am not a loser.
I just have a bad haircut.
Right. Good. Anyone else?
Hi, everybody. My name's Eddie, and I get a bad haircut.
Hello.
Hello, Eddie.
Yeah, you know, you go into a barber and you ask for a little off the top, and the next thing you know, the floor looks like Ed Asner's back. I mean, what are they? Paid by the pound? He knows what I'm talking about. She doesn't get it. She's saying, what, honey? He's nodding. Oh, yeah. It's like I was in the supermarket, and I was in the express checkout line the other day.
Eddie, don't use the group to try out your new material, okay?
No, really. I got a bad haircut.
No, I like this sketch. It was kind of, there was one line that kind of made me cringe when Rob Schneider's like, yeah, I got a bad haircut. And Phil Hartman's like, yeah, you're a stand-up comic. It felt like Inside Baseball, like, all stand-up comics have bad haircuts.
Yeah,
I guess, I don't know.
I like that whole bit, though, because people are talking about their bad haircuts, and Mike Myers is in denial. And then Rob Schneider stands up and he's like, hey, you ever get a bad haircut? And then he has to be interrupted by, of course, our favorite SNL cast member of all time, Siobhan Fallon, running the bad haircut support meeting.
And I hated what a pig I was when my first thought was, Siobhan Fallon's kind of banging in that sketch. I don't know. I was sexually attracted to Siobhan Fallon for a moment.
Who wouldn't be sexually attracted to Siobhan Fallon? Anything else about this sketch? I liked all the little tiny performances. And then, yeah, at the end, MC Hammer is there because his wife, Ellen Cleghorn, has a bad haircut. But the whole support group is like, well, look at your fucking haircut.
Oh, honey, you can't trust your husband to tell you how you really look. He knows what you'd do to him if he told you the truth. Malcolm?
Yes?
How does my hair look?
and tell the truth.
It looks real fly, baby.
See?
Excuse me, but I don't think you can hold Malcolm responsible for your mistakes. I mean, he has to deal with his own bad haircut.
What are you talking about?
Right here on the side, it's really screwed up.
Hey, I'm meant for that to happen.
I mean, hello. I mean, you can see your scalp in some parts.
I told him to do that. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, sure.
Everyone, Malcolm will decide when he wants to talk about his own bad haircut.
This is not a bad haircut. That's a bad haircut. And that's a bad haircut. And baby, that is a bad haircut.
Malcolm!
Truth will set you free.
Malcolm, don't take your anger out on your own hair on other people.
Should I? Okay, I know. It's been like 18 minutes. Should I do something about this? Should I go out there and fucking yell at this guy? I mean, he's got
yeah, a... Yeah, fuck it at this
he's
point.
He's got a chainsaw in his hand. I feel like that's probably a risk.
Wait, why is... Yeah, you don't want to fuck with a guy.
If I yell out my window, hey, stop it with that chainsaw, is he going to go, okay, I'm going to stop this with the chainsaw and start murdering you with my chainsaw?
Because, like, sometimes in those situations, I've been there. You're not thinking. Some guy yells at you. You have a fucking chainsaw that's gas-powered up and ready to go. Somebody says one thing you don't like. That chainsaw is flying out of your hand and going into somebody's throat. It's like you can't help it at that point.
Or worse yet, it's not gas-powered. It's electric. It's plugged in. And he runs after me. He unplugs it. Now it won't spin. Now it's just a rusty chainsaw. He's still stabbing me with it. It's just a lot harder to get inside.
That's just a real slow, painful death. Yeah. I think if you fuck with a guy who's got a chainsaw, that's on you.
All right. Well, yeah, Bad Haircuts Anonymous. Okay sketch. Not great, but it's passable and a lot better than some of the other shit we've gotten over the years.
Yeah. No, I like this one. Good lead-off sketch.
And that gets us to Pearl Harbor suicide, is how I noted this sketch.
Yeah. And then, so it's December 7th, 1941. And we're at a news office, a newspaper office. They're pitching what should be on the front page. Phil Hartman's like, well, obviously, we got to lead with the Pearl Harbor story. Kevin Nealon goes, wait, let's hear out the rest of the room. I mean, everybody else works here. I know this is your baby, this Pearl Harbor thing, but let's hear out what everyone else wants to offer.
Hold on, Phil. We all agree that the Pearl Harbor thing is a big story, but let's see what other possible lead stories we might have. Larry?
Well, we have...
Other stories. Japs attack Pearl Harbor. That's your lead story.
Look, Bill, this whole attack thing is going to be in.
In? Jap sneak attack! U.S. ahead war! There's your whole front page right there, fellas.
Now, listen, Bill, we've all heard your side. We know you're all hot on this Pearl Harbor kick, but let's listen to the other fellas. They work here, too, right? Jimmy, what do we have in sport?
Well, the Lady Bulldogs have a shot at going to the state finals this year.
The finals? Really?
Yeah.
And this is one where I think Kevin Nealon presents himself as like an unsung hero of SNL. He's one of those guys that he was the perfect sort of straight man, you know, like dumb straight. Like he could play straight man that gets jokes well. He was, I think, like kind of a Taron Killam of his day.
Yeah, no, he was good in this. This sketch was like kind of slow, but I almost kind of liked that. It just kind of helped with the absurdity, you know, that there's five guys in a room the day after Pearl Harbor, and they're like, what's on the front page? Well, there's a tornado watch. So is a watch worse than a warning? No. Watch is like the first thing. So you're saying there's a chance there could be a tornado, huh? Ooh, that's big. Now aren't you happy we listened to everyone else instead of jumping to Pearl Harbor?
And I love, what's the weather like? The weather is raining bombs in Hawaii.
And then, yeah, the ending of it is you get to see the newspaper that they printed. Main story is like, tornado watch is a prank. So it wasn't even a real tornado watch. And then they keep flipping the pages and it's like, Lady Bulldogs going to the finals, $400 worth of typewriters stolen, and then local reporter shoots himself.
So yeah, this is, that gets us into the Addams Family song. And
we've already talked extensively about kicking and slapping friends.
And then Weekend Update, which was I didn't really have any jokes that I even wrote down as relevant to me, other than fucking Queen Shaniqua and her really poorly timed Milli Vanilli suicide joke.
Yeah, we only get one desk piece, but man, fucking this Kevin Nealon weekend update. At one point, somebody groaned in the audience, like a joke got nothing, but then someone's like, ah.
Sears sponsored the Thanksgiving airing of E.T. the Extraterrestrial. With Sears sponsoring the film, they had to make a few changes. In this version, when the kid rides his bicycle over the moon, it breaks down.
I mean, there was stuff I liked. And I am, you know, a fan of Kevin Nealon's update era. I certainly like it more than Dennis Miller or Colin Quinn. You know, he's no Norm MacDonald, obviously. But I think he has a place with the good, if not great, update hosts. And yeah. I mean, there's just silly stuff like, let's look at a satellite photo, and it's a photo of a satellite, and there it is.
Yeah.
You know, or there was that one, the one thing I actually did write down was the think about it thing.
Yeah.
Think about a $23 million contract, and you just cut to his face, and he's just making these weird-ass faces.
Yeah, he's just gleefully thinking about having $29 million.
Because I feel like he's not known as much for his sort of absurdism, but I think he was more absurdist than he gets credit for.
Oh, I think he was very absurd, and that's what I liked about Kevin Nealon. I liked those bits, the stupid stuff, but all the news jokes, man, he's just way too dry for this segment. And I think that's what he's going for. I think he thinks it's funny that he's reading these jokes in a dry, like, newspaper man delivery.
Yeah, no, that's definitely his approach, and I respect it, but yeah, a lot of times it falls flat.
It just drags down the energy, you know, because it doesn't feel like a comedy piece at that point. It feels like a weird news segment.
Well, I feel like that's kind of what Dan Aykroyd did.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
And I didn't like it when he did it either.
That's the thing, yeah. So, I mean, but again, I understand where it's coming from, and I do think it makes those weird or absurd bits work better because they're so different from everything else.
Yeah. It just needed to be shorter. If this was half the length, I would forgive the bad jokes if they kept the weird, goofy Kevin Nealon jokes in.
And then Ellen Cleghorn makes a joke about one of the guys from Milli Vanilli trying to kill himself. Of course, we now know that he eventually succeeded in killing himself, so fuck that.
Well, she makes jokes about three people who died suddenly. Michael Jackson, who died early. Milli Vanilli, who one of them died early. And then, of course, Nelson Mandela, who we all know died in prison, right?
Yes. That's what happened in this universe, right?
Yeah, I don't know what the fuck Queen Shaniqua was talking about when she was like, Nelson Mandela was around after prison. What the hell? The guy died in prison.
Yeah.
I swear to God that happened.
Yeah, and along with the Berenstain Bears.
Yeah. And Queen Shaniqua. Queen Shaniqua never existed either.
What are you talking about? Queen Shaniqua, wasn't that the highest grossing SNL movie of all time?
The Queen Shaniqua. Right. The Queen Shaniqua Goes to Idaho. I remember that.
On a serious note, I'm going to pray for Nelson Mandela, who was in town this week addressing the United Nations. His first visit with Harold did with ticker tape parade and no parade this time. That's all right, because some of my sisters and brothers didn't get it. You know, when he came before, because I was hanging out with my stupid girlfriend, Christine. You know, Christine. She said, well, why are they giving him a ticker tape parade? I said, because he was in prison for 27 years. She said, so? My father was in prison for 27 years. They ain't getting him no ticker tape parade. I said, see, it's different. See, Nelson Mandela was in prison for liberating his people, and your father was in prison for liberating them TVs from that department store.
Fuck it. Enough about weekend update. Because I like Tales from the Barbecue.
I was going to ask you, was this a recurring sketch? Because if not, it should have been.
They did this twice. I can't remember if this is the first one or the second one, but I liked both of them. The other one has Tim Meadows as Grandpa telling a story about his days in the war where he was barbecuing on the deck of a boat and then Nazis attacked. So then he was like beating them off with fucking chicken wings and stuff.
See, I like the premise of it, because like you think going into it that he's an old man telling a story of his youth, and it's going to get increasingly outlandish. He meets Santa Claus and the cow that jumped over the moon and all this stuff. But the actual joke is, and then it gets fucking dark. They have to shoot the cow, and then they're like, well, we have a dead cow. We might as well barbecue it. So he's eating the fucking barbecue with Santa. I mean, I love that. I would have loved to see this sketch in other contexts, and again, just get darker and weirder.
This is a story about Santa Claus.
Dad, the kids don't believe in Santa Claus.
Don't believe in Santa Claus? Mm-hmm. Well, Santa Claus is real, and I saved his life. See, up ahead of my sled, I saw something.
Whoa! Whoa! Slow down there!
And it turned out to be Santa Claus.
Santa! Wake up, Santa! Come on, Santa, wake up!
I knew one thing would be sure to snap him out of it. A good whiff for my special sauce.
Yeah, I like this. I just loved when Tim Meadows, so he's grandpa and he's telling his kids about the time he went on the expedition with Admiral Byrd to the North Pole. And then we flash back to Chris Rock as young Tim Meadows. And he's in a dog sled race, but he's also cooking chicken on a grill, like while he's munching the dogs.
Yeah, the fact that he always has the grill on him somehow is just perfect.
Right. He's just always barbecuing. And then, yeah, he wakes up Santa sauce. He wakes up a sleeping Santa with his special barbecue sauce.
Oh, yeah. No, that's, and then just, yeah. And then, yeah, you never know, you know, the cow that jumped over the moon, he was with Santa as well, but he broke all his legs.
And yeah, Santa was upset about that until I murdered his cow and grilled him up, and then Santa, and then you got MC Hammer as Santa, which you couldn't tell what the fuck MC Hammer was saying at all in this sketch. But that made it funnier. Like, I love that MC Hammer was so bad in this.
Now what happened?
Oh, it's terrible. Poor Bossy. She broke her leg on takeoff and I don't know what to do.
See, once a flying cow breaks his leg, he ain't no good to nobody.
What are you doing?
At least not alive.
Bossy, Bossy. I want you to look down yonder. That's right, I think I see a big bale of hay, baby. Why don't you look over there, right over there?
What are you doing with that pistol?
Was Santa mad, Grandpa?
Well, he was at first, but not for long.
Well, there was a moment specifically where he has to react, and this reminded me of that Louis C.K. Shofar sketch, where he has to react to a gunshot, but he's, like, late, and he's just like, whoa?
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that. Because when Chris Rock shoots the cow, they cut to MC Hammer's face, and then the gun goes off, and then like 10 seconds later, MC Hammer's like, who? Like, just so delayed and awkward. Like, the fact that he was such a bad actor in this, like, it just added to the absurdity of what was going on, so it was accidentally funny.
And I would say the same for the Wilt Chamberlain sketch as well. I think he was funny sort of unintentionally.
Oh, yeah, no, he's bad in that sketch, but that makes it good.
Because, like, I didn't get that from, like, Hulk Hogan and Mr. T. Like, I didn't think they were that funny for being bad.
No.
Whereas, but yeah, he was actually funny for being bad.
Yeah, and I think you can tell that he's having a good time. I think he wants to be there. He's enjoying himself. So, I mean, that's kind of cool, too, because with a host of Saturday Night Live, I mean, their energy really, you know, helps the show flow. If you got a host that's like such fucking dead weight, but if you got a host, even if they're bad, if they seem like they like being there, that just adds to the fun.
Yeah, no, it's as fun as a fucking chainsaw in your ear.
Fun as a chainsaw. All right, moving on to Johnny Letter.
My only note for this sketch is Julia Sweeney's tits.
Julia Sweeney is popping the cleavage out there. Ain't no question what gender Julia Sweeney is in this sketch, if you know what I'm talking about.
You know, that, I feel like there should have been, like, that would be the resolution to the It's Pat series. If, like, it was, like, in another sketch, and, like, she was, like, you know, playing, a sexually voluptuous character, and then, like, it turns out she was playing Pat at the time. Like, you were Pat all along!
Didn't we pitch that when we watched the It's Pat movie, is that, like, the ending should have been, like, Pat drops Pat's pants and just has, like, a comically insanely large dick. And I'm like, oh, I guess that answers that question.
Or it's both. She's a hermaphrodite. The question was moot the whole time.
So she's got, like, giant tits and, like, a giant dick. And they're like, wow, that was not something. I went through every possible scenario of what Pat could be. Did not think that was it.
No. She takes off her pants, and it's fucking Quado from Total Recall. Quaid, start the reactor.
Why? Why did we never see what was in Pat's pants? All right, so besides Julia Sweeney's boobies, Johnny Letter, I this one was probably the weakest one of the show.
I love the idea of it, because I get the pitch. It's a Western, but instead of a guy who's like a hard shooting like the Virginian, he writes strongly worded letters to people. That's a good. That's a better premise than the actual sketch.
Yeah, it was another one that was just kind of slow. So yeah, Chris Farley, who is that? That's his only appearance in this, right?
Yeah, he's the reason we're watching this. We got Chris Farley, so we picked a Chris Farley episode, and he's in one sketch.
He's one sketch, and he's not even, like, the lead in that sketch. Yeah, we should have watched the episode he hosted, but no, I enjoyed watching this one. So yeah, Mike Myers gets whiskey thrown in his face by Chris Farley Cowboy. Mike Myers writes a strongly worded letter to Chris Farley's boss. And then you get Phil Hartman as the cattle rustler. The only part of this sketch I really enjoyed was
him naming all the horses or cows, right?
He's like, now, Chris Farley, when you go into town, you're not just representing yourself. You're representing me and our whole flock, like Bossy and Curly Joe and Little Curly Joe and Sammy and Punky.
You see, Jake, when you go into town, it's not just you going. It's me. And it's Flappy. And it's Toothless. And it's Beaverhead. Squishy. And Little Squishy. And Gabby. And Garbanzo. And Big Squishy. And Roy. And Psycho. And all the rest.
That was
fun. I did enjoy that. The thing that would have saved this sketch for me, because a lot of the sketches this night had like a dark edge to them, and there's a moment where Chris Farley's driving back to town and there's like a narrator like, and everybody made fun of him for, stepping down just because of a letter. And I think they should have gone one step further and went, and then they shot him to death.
I thought that's where it was going to go, because, yeah, we the epilogue there doesn't really have a joke in it. I thought he was going to, like, just murder Johnny Letter.
Murdered Johnny Letter. Which is, I did like the end where he just Johnny Letter self-satisfied. Yes, I wrote a letter.
Yeah, well, yeah, I thought that would have been better. And then Chris Farley rode back to town and apologized to Johnny Letter right before stabbing him in the face.
Yeah, it needed something like that, just a last punch to make it worthwhile.
All right, and then we got
some deep thoughts.
I forgot about deep thoughts. That was a good deep thought.
We got the best sketch of the night, the Timex commercial.
if you download this off the Internet Archives, you will get a beautiful 1991 commercial for Timex where it's a dude in a dress, but I think he's supposed to be a lady. And I guess the joke is that his face stops clocks.
He's so ugly.
Except
that,
Timex.
Well, every glass shatters around his face, his reflection. But Timex is so strong and sturdy that it can handle his ugly ass fucking face.
Yeah, takes a licking but keeps on ticking. So yeah, when he gets to the watch store, all the clocks stop except for the Timex one. But it's more physical because it's just a weird looking dude in a fucking muumuu.
Yeah, he looks like was the guy who owns the bar in Happy Days.
Oh, he does. He kind of looks like the Time to Make the Donuts guy, but without the mustache.
Was that not the same guy?
Time to Make the Donuts guy and Al from Happy
Weren't
Days.
They the same guy?
No.
Oh. I don't know. Maybe that's my Mandela effect. Maybe they were all in prison with Nelson Mandela and the Berenstain Bears.
They both died in prison, famously, but no, they were different people.
Right after filming the Queen Shaniqua movie.
Remembrances of Love with Wilt Chamberlain.
All right. Remembrances of Love starring Wilt Chamberlain. I guess because we also got an update joke about Wilt Chamberlain, I guess this must have been around the time when Wilt Chamberlain announced that he had had sex with, like, what? 200,000 women or something like that, or 100,000 women.
Yeah, which I feel
some
like
exorbitant number.
I'm kind of surprised this is a sketch they wasted on MC Hammer as the host. I feel like they could have done this as a recurring bit with Tim Meadows.
Yeah, I would have actually. I think I would have liked this because. So since Wilt Chamberlain has had sex with like 100,000 women, he's remembering all his past loves, like number 13,906. Which he met when he was rebounding from a girl who was still in the bathroom.
And just the joke of it, you then cut to him with these ridiculously long legs that they have to move around haphazardly throughout the sketch. And that's the joke, is how ridiculous that is, just on a practical level.
Yeah, he's got these stupid big-ass prop legs, which I love when he's laying in bed and they're, like, pointed at two different angles.
And then, of course, it ends with her leaving. Hey, she just has to go. And then all of a sudden another girl just comes in like, hey, I happen to be here. And next week, you remember 13,058.
But it's also done in the style of where it's not just about sex. He's actually, like, falling in love and having a deep connection over a, you know, a 3-minute conversation with Ellen Cleghorn.
They talk about going to see Cabaret, and then, like, 3 minutes later, remember when we talked about seeing Cabaret?
Yeah, that was all good.
I saw Cabaret instead, excuse me, and that was excellent. This is good.
Yeah, can you imagine that? Both people were living in impossible times, trying to make the best of an intolerable situation.
Oh, I know.
And how was that Joel Grey?
The whole cast was excellent.
I was totally head over heels for Cheryl. Maybe I was feeling a little vulnerable. I was on the rebound from a previous relationship with a girl who was still in the bathroom. But there was no time for analyzing. I've always followed my heart.
Cheryl, I don't know how to say this. It's like, when we're together, it's just so right.
Oh, I feel it too.
Like, remember the time when we talked about Cabaret?
Yeah, when you said that it was the making the best of an intolerable situation?
Yeah, you're just so... so wonderful.
Oh, yes.
I got about nose for that. And then, want to talk about Little Hammer?
What? Okay, what was that? Because I didn't listen to it. I just kind of skimmed through it. And all of a sudden, this little dude starts dancing.
Yeah, again, maybe this is a teaching moment. Maybe we shouldn't skip past the SNL
you
musical
what?
Guest.
Because I will never regret skipping past Captain Beefheart. That was the greatest decision I ever made in my life.
Oh man, I wish Captain Beefheart would have came out and danced to MC Hammer.
I wish Captain Beefheart would have hosted that episode.
That would have been awesome. But yeah, no, we're skipping through fucking This Is the Way We Roll.
Which I don't remember that song.
I that one sounded familiar to me. But yeah, then halfway through, MC Hammer's like, hey, little man, come on out here. And just a little kid does the hammer dance and fucking pretty good too.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
most entertaining part of that bit.
Yeah, so I don't think this was like a contest winner deal. Like, this kid must have like toured with Hammer or something.
I was wondering, is he a little kid or is he like a Gary Coleman type?
Oh, I think he's a kid.
I don't know. He seemed to be a little too skilled for an actual child. I'm thinking there's some shenanigans going on there.
No, I think he's just like a 10-year-old kid doing the Hammer dance.
Oh, maybe. But yeah, no, that was cool, and like I said, this is a thing where it's like the performances are better than their reputation, I feel like.
Yeah, no, I really like those. Did I need 3 Hammer performances?
Well, I mean...
No.
You know what would have been better is if they'd brought... Because, like, we didn't mention Pugsley and Wednesday show up, fucking Christina Ricci and whoever that other kid is.
Jimmy Workman?
Sure. if you say so. But they came out and, did they introduce that bit or no? I can't remember.
They introduced the first song, at least. They definitely introduced Adam's Groove.
Yeah. Like, they should have had in the Adam's Groove segment all of the Adam's family come out. Fucking Raul Julia and shit. And Christopher Lloyd, like, doing, like, shtick as it was going on.
Oh, I would have loved to see Raul Julia doing the hammer dance. That would have been awesome.
Because they're all in the video. I remember the music video. They all show up for it, I believe.
Are they in it, or is it just clips from the movie? I don't remember a music video.
No, I know Christina Ricci's in it, and I'm pretty sure the other ones show up as well.
I don't remember.
Because I remember they played that music video in the theaters. They played it either before or after the movie.
Oh, it definitely was on the VHS.
Or maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Because I thought I saw that in theaters.
It might have been in theaters, but no, I definitely remember the Addams Family VHS had... the Adam's Groove music video on it. That was a selling point.
And for the record, I'm probably misremembering it completely because I remember that song being in the sequel, not the original. I remember that being Adam's Family Values. And I guess I just thought it's the sequel, so of course they're selling out. But apparently they were selling out from the fucking beginning.
Oh yeah, no, that's OG Adam's Family, buy our soundtrack. Well, I think they knew what they were doing. They're making the Addams Family movie. Of course, they're already thinking about how do we cash in.
Yeah, and I mean it's still a good movie, and I think the sequel is still good as well. So I mean,
that's all that I think matters. Both of those I think are solid flicks. And then our final sketch of the night, Dick Clark's receptionist. Is this the first one? Because the audience wasn't really reacting that.
Yeah, and
crazy about.
Was it always somebody famous like Dick Clark, or was it always Dick? Because that seemed.
It was always Dick. It was always Dick Clark. He was David Spade has always played Dick Clark's receptionist.
Really, I never associated that with Dick Clark. I just thought he was somebody's assistant.
No, I'm pretty sure.
Because why is it Dick Clark? It doesn't matter that it's Dick Clark.
No, I think just it's that's funny.
I guess.
And yes, this is the first appearance of Dick Clark's receptionist. And yes, he has always played Dick Clark's receptionist. Only three appearances? Wow. I remember them beating this shit into the ground, but no, only three appearances.
I feel like he might have. Is that counting like update and shit? Because I feel like he showed up elsewhere or like in other sketches.
No, he definitely never showed. Oh, well, this is according to SNL Archives, three appearances. But no, I don't think he ever showed up on update.
Maybe. I don't know. Well, I mean, maybe I'm just mistaking him for Jeff Foxworthy.
probably. But yeah, no, like the "and you are," like that seemed like his shtick.
Well, and he also had the sketch where he was a flight attendant.
I was just going to bring that up. They only did that twice, but like you would think.
It's basically the same
thing. Yeah, but you would think they did the fucking bye-bye guys like 18 times. But no, that was only in two episodes. Bye-bye.
Yeah, but I think I was kind of merging those two sketches into one sketch.
I did like this, but yeah, this is the first appearance, apparently, of Dick Clark's receptionist. It's David Spade, and people are going in to see Dick Clark. He just tells them to sit and wait.
I was kind of bored with it until
David. Yeah, that's where it got good, because Phil comes in, and David Spade's like, all right, go sit down, wait for Dick Clark. MC Hammer comes in. He's like, I'm Hammer. You just let me in. He's like, nah, David Spade doesn't realize who Hammer is. Tells him to sit down. And then fucking Dana Carvey shows up. It's like a Star Trek alien saying, I have to tell Dick Clark that the world's going to end because he has to broadcast it on the national television so that everyone is warned. And of course, the answer is, and you are? Did you have an appointment? Is he expecting you?
I must communicate with Earthling Richard Clark.
Uh-huh.
And you are? Kremlock from planet Orton 5.
Right, and this is regarding...
the end of humanity.
And you're on Earth because you...
must tell Dick Clark to go on television airwaves to warn people of this planet of imminent doom and destruction.
Right. And you will refer to us by...
Meglar, the All-Knowing. I must warn all humans that because of your warlike ways, you will be punished when a fleet of star cruisers representing all the planets will rain terror upon your planet.
Got it. Enough. Thank you. Too much. I tell you what. I'm going to put regarding warlike ways, okay? And when you see him, you can elaborate, okay? If you could just have a seat, it'll be a minute.
This is urgent.
Well, there's three people in front of you. If you can work it out with them, fine. If not, just be patient. Thanks.
Yeah, and then he goes away and comes back as Jeff from the Hot Dog Hut.
Jeff from Wiener Hut! I love that, because they... what, his name's like Kremlak or something? And then he's like, it is me, Jeff from Wiener Hut. Nice try, Kremlak, but now you've lost your place in line.
Oh, no. Yeah, no, I think all around, there wasn't really like an outright dud sketch in this whole thing. Like, even Johnny Letter, which was kind of a half dud, had some stuff I liked. Everything had something I liked in this episode.
Yeah, Johnny Letter was the weakest sketch, but I didn't hate it. So yeah, this was fucking...
I feel like this is the best episode you've watched.
It might be. Surprise, goddamn surprise. The MC Hammer episode of Saturday Night Live is one of the best we have watched.
The cursed chainsaw episode of our podcast.
Yeah, this was downright enjoyable. I liked watching this. And yeah, since we were short a couple sketches, because we didn't talk about all three musical performances in depth, this is one of our shortest episodes. Anything else?
Well, I want to talk about the good nights and the mysterious voice at the end.
Oh, yeah. I didn't listen to that.
It was like, this guy's like, am I live? I don't think we're live. And then he goes, oh, we're live. And coming up next, two brothers and their find their wives together in bed.
David Viscoe, and we're live here, and I don't seem to be on the air. We are on the air, that's good. So it is live, you can tell. I have an interesting call tonight that I just don't know what to do with. It's two men who are brothers who found their wives in bed together. Ticklish, difficult, and typical of our show. Stay tuned. We'll be right with you.
Just, and it's like, you know, par for the course for our show, but it's like, I don't know what show they're referring to.
Yeah, that must have been like, this must have been rerun from like the Comedy Channel or so. A lot of the SNL episodes that exist online are reruns from the Canadian, like, Comedy Network.
Which I guess they didn't cut sketches, which is weird to me.
Yeah.
Because I know Comedy Central did.
Yeah, that's why these are the ones that people put online, because, like, because the actual live broadcasts are, like, almost impossible to find unless you happen to have, like, a videotape. Like, they never, like, I don't know why. It's Saturday Night Live, but they don't release live, and they also fuck with it too after the fact, so they'll like add more laughter in, but the whole fucking point of the show is live. Release the actual live recordings instead of these like pre-packaged shits.
I think they use more licensed music now as well, and that's always a bitch to redo, like to put out again.
Yeah,
like, that's why Malcolm in the Middle never came out on DVD after the first season, because they had so much licensed music it was like too expensive to publish it. So I think that's the, like, they have to cut around that shit all the time.
Yeah. But yeah, that's true. Because yeah, if you look on, I mean, I've gotten to this one. I was doing my blogs. There's some episodes of SNL that just like don't exist in their full capacity anymore. Like no one has a tape of it, and the only thing you can find is like an old Comedy Central rerun that like cut out three sketches. So there you go. We'll never see this episode of Saturday Night Live in its full entirety.
But it's an probably an older episode, so it's like, oh, we missed somebody in blackface. But we have it in the next episode, so it's fine.
For some reason, all the blackface is just saved for posterity.
Well, that was like, remember when Jackie Gleason was like, everybody, you know, nobody's saving their stuff. I gotta put everything on video so it's saved for posterity. They were like that, but only for the blackface.
Yeah, gotta make sure this Terry Sweeney and blackface sketch survives. But who cares about the Kevin Klein episode from season 14?
Was that the one of the missing?
That was one that I like could not find, and I was like, "Well, I mean, I found it, but it was like the episode I found only had like four sketches in it." I was like, "Well, I guess I'll never watch this one."
All right. Well, hopefully the chainsaw is now done. Now that we're done with it,
just in time. All right. So now we're at the point where we talk about what the fuck we're doing next week. I have, oh fuck, I've rolled 140, which is Molly Shannon. I'm not doing another fucking Talking Dog movie again.
Superstar is still out there?
Okay, my mind immediately went to, do we have to watch another fucking Talking Dog movie?
I mean, she's probably in a lot of them.
Because you know Molly Shannon is going to be in eight more Talking Dog movies. But I could also do another, And We're Back with Molly Shannon.
Well, I mean, let's go through her filmography first, see if anything pops out. Oh, she is in Sextuplets.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, she was in Little Man, too. She must be friends with the Wayans brothers.
Sextuplets, I believe it's on Netflix, so I don't even have to download it or anything. I would be up for that.
Yeah, I could watch that. But yeah, if we were going to do Superstar, I would rather just watch all the Mary Catherine Gallagher sketches.
I'm saying either Sextuplets or if we find anything
She's
else.
She's in Happiness?
I don't want to watch Happiness for this podcast.
Why not? But no, she. That's just, I don't remember her in that movie.
Oh, how weird when fucking the Dylan Baker wants to fuck that little boy. Let's analyze that and just how weird it is.
All right. Okay, let's see.
Oh, she's in My Five Lives.
Oh, that's right. I've been wanting to do... Someone's in Meet Wally Sparks. Maybe it's her, too. But yeah, she's in both shitty...
I am up for either of those. I'd be up for Osmosis Jones, frankly.
Osmosis Jones. All right. We got some fucking...
We got a selection here.
I could check out Shallow Hal, but I think that's...
Would that be interesting enough? I don't know. Maybe.
My Boss's Daughter.
You've been trying to push that to me for years, and I don't
know. No, it just keeps coming up randomly. I think, like, three or four SNL cast members are in that. Did we watch Snow Buddies?
Yes, we did. For Molly Shannon,
I don't think
I believe
we did. We watched Snow Dogs.
Oh, am I thinking? No, I think she's in another Buddies movie.
Yes, we watched Air Buddies with Molly Shannon, and she's also in Snow Buddies.
Okay, then no, that's what I was thinking of was Air Buddies.
Okay. But no, I don't want to watch Snow Buddies.
Because why the fuck am I in this situation where there are two Buddies movies that I can fucking potentially watch because of Molly Shannon?
Yeah, I just got done saying I don't want to watch another fucking Talking Dog movie.
Well, those are the ones you love, though.
I would watch the Snow Buddies because, I think I've been saving that in case we ever did do it on the podcast. That's like the one Buddies movie I've never watched.
Yeah. Really?
Well,
then I'm sorry to say, I feel like we have to watch Snow Buddies.
Nah, I'm good.
Well, right now, I'm between Sextuplets and My Five Wives. Yeah.
Here's what we got on the Molly Shannon table. My Five Wives.
That's a definite on the list.
Rodney Dangerfield comedy. Osmosis Jones.
I mean, we can also save it for Bill Murray or Chris Rock.
Shallow Hal.
I'd be willing to watch it again, but I don't think that'd be like a terrible movie.
No, but I'm interested in watching it again because I remember really liking this, but I would just like to watch it in, you know,
the cold hard light of day.
Yeah, it's a 2001 movie that's like the joke is fat shaming, but I remember it being like, you know, not terrible in that respect. Like, I don't think I remember it being offensive to.
That was always the thing with the Farrelly brothers. They were always like inclusive. Like they would use like real people with like mental disabilities and things when they would depict them. So it was never like disgusting or gratuitous. So, you know, yeah.
I'd be curious about rewatching that, but maybe not for the podcast. My Boss's Daughter. Fuck that.
No, fuck it. Fuck it to hell.
Snow Buddies.
I know you're burned on it, but I'd watch it. This, no. Bad Teacher.
Oh, I just never saw it. But yeah, or Sextuplets.
At this point, I'll do Shallow Hal if you want, but I would do Shallow Hal, Sextuplets, or My Five Wives, and I'm going to leave it up to you. This sword of Damocles is your decision.
Oh, fuck. I think my vote. Sorry, no one on the podcast or no one listening to the podcast knows what I'm looking at, and it's the trailer for Sextuplets starring Marlon Wayans.
We're already laughing at it.
I don't know if I can watch that, but also I don't know if I can watch My Five Wives because that's got to be terrible.
My pitch for Sextuplets is it's a Netflix original film, so I don't have to do any extra work. I can just watch it on my TV.
All right. I think this might be a case where I think I might check.
But if you're really curious about Shallow Hal, I mean, I get that, and I would do that as well.
Okay.
Let's knock My Five Wives out for now.
Take it out of the equation?
Yeah.
Shallow Hal or Sextuplets? Because, yeah, I'm just...
Between those two.
I'm worried My Five Wives is just not going to be, like, interesting. Like, I'm worried it's going to be a very boring movie.
Did you ever hear of a movie, a Rodney Dangerfield movie called The Godson?
With Dom DeLuise?
Dom DeLuise and Kevin from fucking Kids in the Hall.
Kevin McDonald?
Kevin McDonald plays the titular godson.
And it's a Godfather parody, right?
Yeah, well, it's
or
like
at least the
guy
poster is.
Kevin McDonald plays Rodney Dangerfield's son, who's a mafia guy who's like learning to be the next Don, and Dom DeLuise plays like a rival Don. And I looked it up because I was doing it for another thing, and it just looks like the worst fucking movie in the world.
Yeah, I've seen the box to that, but I don't know anything else. All right, so I think what we're gonna do is, all right, let's plan to watch Marlon Wayans as Sextuplets. But what I am going to do is, I'm going to check out the first, like, 10 minutes of it and just give it a little taste. And if that doesn't work, we'll do Shallow Hal.
Okay, so Shallow Hal is our backup. I can only notice, unless there's only four Marlon Wayans, because one of them's clearly not Marlon Wayans, and one of them's, like, a little kid.
No,
there's six people there, but those two can't be Marlon Wayans, right?
I think they're all Marlon Wayans, yeah. What?
Well, one of them's white.
Oh, yeah, no, they did fucking White Chicks. What are you talking about?
But but they were disguised as white chicks. That real Sextuplets don't work that way.
What the fuck did you just say?
Like, if six twins are born, one of them can't be white.
You know what movie this is? This is Marlon Wayans as Sick Tuck.
Look, I expect the utmost scientific accuracy in my Marlon Wayans film.
Are you looking at the same poster for sextuplets as I am? And you're like, wait, wait, wait. Hold up. Back up here, Marlon Wayans. You're expecting me to believe that not only are you six people, but one of them is a different race?
When we watched Little Man, I never didn't believe that a little person could pose as a baby, and everyone would look at him and go, that's clearly not a little person in a diaper, that's a baby. It made perfect sense for me. To me, it was scientifically accurate. This, it's just all over the place. I really lost a lot of respect for Marlon Wayans.
Oh, man. Now that I remember how much fun Little Man was to watch, like, not a good movie. Don't watch Little Man, but it was fun to watch.
It hurt me physically, but yeah, talking about it, he wants the mom to suck his dick.
Oh my God. I'm getting more and more excited for sextuplets. All right.
Oh, man.
So I think that might just be the winner. Warning, it may be Shallow Hal. We may just call it audible.
I'll get Shallow Hal just in case. I'll have it as a backup, yeah. But
let's download. Yeah. I won't check out sextuplets. We'll leave it up to chance. We'll start sextuplets. If we get, we might 20-minute rule it, but it'll either be sextuplets or Shallow Hal next week.
All right.
But sextuplets, I think that's going to be a good one. I don't know. Something tells me it's not going to be a good movie, but I might enjoy watching and talking about it. So, six Marlon Wayans for the price of one next week.
I mean, you love one Marlon Wayans. Why wouldn't you love five more of them?
You ain't loved Marlon Wayans until you see Marlon Wayans with big fat titties.
I mean, all of my sexual fetishes in one movie. Molly Shannon, black people playing white people, Marlon Wayans in a fat lady suit.
Black comedians with big fake titties.
I am just coming all over the place.
All right, so sextuplets next week.
That's why there's sex in the title, because it's so damn sexy.
Until we kick and slap you again.
Our friends that listen to this podcast.
Get off the shed. Say what they want to say, live how they want to live, play how they want to play, dance how they want to dance, kick and they slap a friend. They do what they wanna do, say what they wanna say, live how they wanna live, play how they wanna play, dance how they wanna dance, kick and they slap a friend.